Welcome. This is Rebecca Bennett, editor at Apparition Lit. Today I'll be reading Once Upon a Night by Sam Muller, which appeared in issue 11, Redemption, published in July 2020. Sam Muller loves dogs and books and spends much of her time trying to save one from the other. Her work has appeared in Truancy Magazine, Deep Magic, and Cosmic Roots and Eldritch Shores, among other. And now, Once Upon a Night by Sam Muller. The bonsai, a miniature banyan, is a little out of line. I move it an inch to the right, equidistant between the penholder and the soapstone owl. Perfect. The desk is tidy. The shredder has done its work. Notebook and phone are slumbering with the fishes. They will go through the house with their unique brand of thoroughness. They may leave no sign of their violation, or they may leave a maze of mess behind, stage setting the postmortem, armed robbery gone wrong. My throat feels as though I have swallowed a peg full of sand. I head to the kitchen for some water, just a sip. I can't afford a full bladder. The sound of a vehicle rips the night's silence. I wait for it to stop, disgorge. It races past. Silence shrouds the night again. Why did I go to the park? Would I be working on a mathematical dilemma now, or reading a book, or sleeping, had I not taken fate's fork to that wasteland of trees? I drink the water, one sip at a time. No, the park wasn't the turning point. It was a landmark on the road. Invisibility, attribute of the gods desirable to man, held no fascination for me. What intrigued me was its antithesis, a visibility so potent that nothing could conceal it. I mused about it in the University Journal, a lighthearted commentary on the possible of creating a material that would defeat every attempt at concealment. A material visible through any covering, natural or man-made. I called it the uber-visibility possibility. 2 weeks later, Colonel M., the governor of the province in which the university town was located, called on me. He came unannounced, except for the perfunctory knock at my door. I was working on a research document and looked up, expecting to see a colleague or a student. When the tall, uniformed figure strode in, clicked his heels, and closed the door behind him, I understood the meaning of that standard cliché. My heart fell to the floor. The colonel smiled. There was nothing gloating in that smile. It was a normal smile, as though he was so used to my kind of reaction from everyone whose privacy invoided, he'd ceased to see anything abnormal in it. He wished me a good morning and handed me a sealed envelope. He pulled a chair and sat down, telling me I should read the letter now. I picked up the letter opener and realized the meaning of another cliché. My fingers were all thumbs. Five thumbs mangle opened the envelope, revealing a single sheet of paper, a paragraph, a sentence, an invitation. The president will meet me at 5 p.m. today. Today, October 26th, I knew what the day was supposed to hold. A lecture at 11 a.m., a lunch appointment at 12:30, a tutorial at 3 p.m., a lecture at 4 p.m. Life's ordinary doings must vacate the stage when confronted by the extraordinary. The colonel stood up, clicked his heels again, walked to the door and held it open. "The helicopter is waiting," he said. Throughout the ride and the long wait for the appointed hour, I wish I had brought some music or a book. Wished I could get a canapé or a cake past my dry throat. Wished I could stop drinking glass after glass of iced water. Most of all, I wished I could stop remembering the grainy photos of the man and the woman who had been my colleagues, who vanished one ordinary day, reappeared months later in a conspiracy trial, and vanished again into whatever black hole those guilty of unspeakable crimes end up. I clung to the knowledge that when a petition asking for clemency for my former colleagues landed on my desk, I sent it away unsigned. The water weighing on my bladder, I hurried to the visitor's washroom. Behind its closed door, I felt safe. Then I thought of hidden cameras, of someone somewhere watching my desperate struggle against a recalcitrant button, and had to clap my hand over my mouth until the bile returned to where it came from. The beetle-browed, bespectacled, and mustache visage was familiar. I saw it almost every day, everywhere, papers, television, posters, internet, books. But seeing it in flesh and blood was another experience. My first thought was that he was old. In the pictures, the salt and pepper hair makes him look distinguished, ageless. Face to face, you see what pictures hide, a hint of a wrinkle, folded flesh rising above a shirt collar, and behind the ever-present tinted glasses, the shadow of a squint. The president smiled, making an expansive movement with a muscular hand, indicating three chairs facing him from a table that was full of papers, yet orderly. He expressed the hope that I had been well looked after by his people. My yes didn't even sound like a yes to my own ears. He leaned back against his chair. "I read your recent article." That's when I noticed the magazine on the table, open at my piece. My thank you sounded quite like a thank you. Interesting piece. A fantasy, sir, I said. When I was a boy, many of the things we take for granted now would have seemed like fantasy. He chuckled, a strangely high-pitched sound. Professor, my life's work is to forge a new future for our beloved motherland. In that task, I need both practical men and men of vision. I have enough of the former, but not enough of the latter. That's why I was delighted by your piece. I stared, trying to make sense of the words. Flailing, floundering, lost. The president nodded. We are busy men, Professor, in our different ways. Let me come to the point. I think extra visibility is a great idea. I want you to set up a committee of experts to study how this visionary concept can be turned into a useful reality. And I want you to head the committee. Money is no problem. Neither are non-monetary resources. My secretary has already talked to the university. You'll be given indefinite leave, fully paid, of course. And for this project, you can name your own salary. Is this what drowning feels like, I wondered? This sense of being submerged by a force of nature, helpless, hopeless. Let me reassure you, Professor, that I don't believe in politicians trying to control experts. In the pursuit of this project, you'll have all the freedom you need. I have only two conditions. Speed is of the essence, and so is secrecy. He pushed his chair back soundlessly, got up, and held out his hand. I wish you all the luck. I stood up, my chair creaking even against the thick carpet, clutched at the table edge with my left hand, and held out my right. The blue sea runs until it meets blue sky. I wanted to say the words out loud, but I didn't, because they sounded trite and I wasn't alone. The sharks come up almost to the beach, the president said. He sat straight in the rattan chair, an incongruous figure in track bottoms and t-shirt. I nodded. Over the last 3 years, I'd become an expert in the art of conversing with the president. He often made remarks for which he didn't expect an answer. He never did that in his office, but here, at his retreat, a headland shielded from curious eyes by the ocean, a river, a lagoon, and a carefully tended wood, he allowed his iron control to relax, to be himself. More tea, Professor? The president never used my name. He never used the full names of any of us working on Project U. It was always Professor this or Doctor that. His tongue would linger on those academic handles as if they were icing on a cake. I accepted the tea, even though I didn't want it. That was another unwritten rule. When the president offered you tea or sandwiches, watercress or mango pickle, never refuse. The president refilled my cup and watched as I struggled with the tongs, almost dropping a cube of brown sugar on the pristine white tablecloth. Anything on your mind, Professor? Nothing wrong with the project, I hope. My fingers gripped the bone china handle. No, no. The first test will happen as planned? Yes, sir. He leaned forward, friendly, confidential. A personal matter, then. You need something. Money, perhaps. The words rushed out. It's about Dr. K's pension. The narrow forehead creased. Beneath the bristly mustache, the thin lips morphed into a straight line. I hear his wife is becoming a problem. His widow, sir, I said, replacing the still full cup carefully on the saucer. An unfortunate accident. He was rather inebriated at the time, I hear, the president chuckled. Drunk as a skunk is what the police chief said. 41 days ago, the wife-turned-widow sat by the coffin, straight and tearless, telling each visitor, he never drank. A mantra, a challenge. I tested each word before allowing my tongue to say them out loud. His death was a shock to her, sir. She's not in her right mind. You know what a bereaved woman is like. The stare continued like the sea until it reached whatever place it was going. I know what women are like, my dear professor. That's why I didn't want any involved in this project. He shifted the heavy gold wristwatch up and down. She was a radical in her university years. Everyone's a radical in university, sir. The colorless eyes swooped on me. Were you, Professor? No, no. I had no time for politics. He smiled. Exactly. I chose to trust you with this project not only because it was your idea and you had all the necessary qualifications. Expertise is important, but loyalty is the only indispensable quality. I don't mean that you have to sing my praises. All I ask is you don't oppose me. Do you understand the difference? I gulped and nodded. I fear this lady was exerting pressure on her husband. Wasn't he asking too many questions in the last several months? Didn't he visit you at home to ask you how the extravisible paint will be used? Didn't you tell them that was a question for politicians and not scientists? There was a vein of fire in my throat. My advisors told me he should be eased out of the project. I was reluctant. He was a brilliant physicist. His only fault was not picking his wife carefully. He stood up. Death erases life, so it should erase life's mistakes as well. I will advise my secretary to attend to the matter of the pension. I hope the lady will forget her delusions and devote the rest of her life to her fatherless children. I have some work to attend to, but please, Professor, do sit and enjoy the view. I didn't sit again. Once he was gone, I walked up to the shade of an ailanthus and stared out to the sea, no longer calm, a little restless. Are you waiting for the sharks, Professor? Colonel Lamb loved cats and walked as silently as one, boots notwithstanding. He was the liaison between the president and the committee, the link between experts and the paymaster. I half turned, the sea still in my eyes. Why would the sharks come here? For the same reasons birds come to a bird feeder. He laid a hand on my shoulder, light, friendly, and something else. You won't see them now. They only come at night. I frowned. Do sharks feed only at night? He shrugged. The helicopters only come at night. The first test was an 80% success. Success seemed within reach. A second test was scheduled for later in the month. The accident happened in between. It made headlines. The tragic death of a widow of a noted physicist who had died 4 months ago in another accident, and her two children. The funeral was a scant affair. The family, her parents and his brother, looked as if they too had been hit by a mega cement mixer. The mourners stood in ones and twos, avoiding each other's eyes. Not a word was said, only an occasional sob. No viewing, because there was nothing left to view. A brief religious service, and straight to the merciful fire. I stared at the four men carrying a coffin that just one of them could have lifted. 3 + 1 = 4. The attendants closed the door to the crematorium. The handful of mourners scattered like leaves caught in a vicious wind. I clutched my umbrella and joined the hurrying herd. It wasn't raining. The sky was gray. Funereal. A sandwich bar drew me in because it had artificial light and people safe in their own ordinary worlds. I bought a cheese sandwich, but my gravelly throat turned eating into a kind of torture. 3 + 1 = 4. Did someone mutter that accidents were kinder? Who? Where? Was it me? The waitress eyed me warily. I wrapped the uneaten sandwich in paper serviette and went out, allowed my feet to take me wherever they wanted. They took me to the park. The park had been abandoned some years ago because the municipal council lacked the funds for its upkeep. It was now a square of wilderness at the edge of this university town, all symmetry obliterated by a profusion of branches, leaves, and vines. Did she ever come here recently? She would have loved this wilderness. 3 + 1 = 4. Forgetting, that is the true cue to happiness. I pushed my way in, found a reasonably intact seat, and sat down, dumping the umbrella and the cheese sandwich beside me. Did we sit on this very seat? Forget. 3 + 1 = 4. Or is it 0? All gone, vanished, empty. A rustle made me turn to see a bushy tail vanishing into the undergrowth, a dog or a fox. There is no life without forgetting, only death. A cement mixer, for example. 4 + 1 = 5. No, 4 + 1 = 0. Why see when blindness is beguilingly safe? I forced myself to get up. I'd go after the dog or fox, walk about this wild place until I was calm, then go home. Forget the past, live in the present. It has served me well all my life. You only care for figures, she had said, parting, kissing my cheek and then laughing. Mathematical ones. Did the president know? That day, when he mentioned her radical university days, did he know? What was there to know? A moment of light and an infinity of dullness? A starburst of chaos in an otherwise orderly universe? The sound brought me back, high-pitched like the president's chuckle, a bark, not a laugh. I stopped, realizing the meaning of yet another cliché, rooted to the ground. The fox stood, barring my path, barking. Behind it was a child, a girl, raggedy hair, dirty pinafore, eyes as wild as the park. She'd clutched at the cheese sandwich with stubby fingers. Small, like the last of the three coffins. My feet turned into wings. I fled. What's wrong? The colonel's cheeks were flushed, his eyes dilated. I met his eyes. That's science. Things go wrong all the time. The paint was supposed to be indelible. It can be extra visible as hell, but if it goes off at one rub, what's the point? Depends on how you mean to use it. His eyes narrowed. In whatever way necessary. How? Why the sudden interest, Professor? You never wanted to know before, and this is the time not for questions but for answers. If I were you, I would focus on giving the paint a little more permanence. It's not vulgar curiosity. If I know what kind of surface it'll be used on, for example, paper or human skin or, oh! The colonel's fingers closed on my arm like a vice. He bent his head until the cinnamon scent of his aftershave clogged my nostrils. You're not a bad man, Professor, and I like you. So let me give you some advice. Stop asking questions. Stop thinking. Just do the job you were hired to do. He turned on his heels, strode ahead, and stopped, saying over his shoulder, and stay away from funerals. Life went on. The park was cleared for a multi-purpose development project. Mall, offices, apartments, restaurants, cinemas. Trees felled and taken away. Homeless trees, homeless fox, homeless girl. 1 + 1 = 4 + 2 = 6. How many trees? Is the continuum countable or uncountable? The third test replicated the results of the second test with minor variations. The colonel stared, first at the blank spot, then at his stained fingers. She stood up and left. Everyone else followed. 2 days later, I applied for leave to attend an international conference. My application was refused. I could have run then. But I've heard enough about the uncertainty and the squalor of fugitive existence to know it was not for me. Our options depend on who we are. I was a mathematician who made an unplanned turn and tumbled into a parallel universe of non-accidental accidents and shark-feeding helicopters. I continued to work, ignoring the way a room would fall silent when I entered. The eyes that never met mine, the stares that had always followed me, so sharp they felt like arrows in my back. I worked harder than ever, counting every minute spent on eating, every hour spent sleeping a waste. Professor, my life's work is to forge a new future for a beloved motherland, the president had told me on the first day we met. I too had a future to forge, a future not of presence, but absence. After all, what is mathematical life without zero? When I left the lab last evening, I had no doubt about the fire. I knew it would be more than enough to pay my debt. I just hoped it would stop there. The doorbell chimes, one polite ring, reassuring in its normalcy. I wonder how many people open their doors, lulled by such rings, only to confront monsters clad in everyday working clothes and expressionless faces. I walk to the door, ignoring the books I will never read. On the wall, the landscape of Van Gogh, final, self-obliterating madness watches me. I look through the peephole. Two men with forgettable faces stand in the porch light. Panic hits. A visceral blow. I think about making a dash for it. Only for a second. I'm a bad runner, and no one will come to my aid even if I reach the crowded parts of town. People have become adept at not seeing what they are not supposed to see. And in many a paradise, there is none more invisible to the good subject than the traitor. I should know, because not so long ago, I too was the good subject. I open the door wide for the jasmine-scented night, and for them. The two men stand where they are. From the outer darkness, a third man steps out. A hand falls on my shoulder, light, friendly, and something else. The helicopter is waiting, Professor, says the colonel. That was Once Upon a Night by Sam Muller. You can learn more about Sam and her story at apparitionlit.com on the stories page. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll be posting more stories and poetry soon. Thank you.